Well, welcome to Addicted to Faith, the Last Storyteller podcast. I'm your host, Jim Hurdle. And tonight we have a special treat. We've got two guests. We have Catherine King and her daughter, Joanna King. And they have come together and they've written a historical Christian saga. The first book was called No Place for Us. And the second one, which just recently came out, was No Chance for Us. And everything about the title and the genre, I find really exciting. How are you guys doing?
Great. Thank you.
Good.
Doing good.
Joanna, you hold a degree in graphic design from Bob Jones University. Go Bruins. And Catherine, you teach creative writing and literature. And you've edited books for other authors. So you guys have a lot more to do than just write.
Tell
us who you
like
are.
To inspire. We like to inspire people. We actually, my daughter and I both teach creative writing and English and things like that. We teach at an underground Christian school in China. And so basically it's just like a regular school, but it's kind of like that whole Anne Frank hide behind things. They've had the police investigate them on the whole nine yards.
Wow.
It's been a labor of love. I've done it for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And Joanna's been doing it for 25 years now.
Should be up to like the fifth or sixth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's very rewarding. These kids are very dedicated to just wanting a good education, mostly. So I've worked actually done writing for quite some time. I homeschooled my children on all the way up through, and then they did college. And then during that time, I helped another author fact check her books and worked on some editing and things like that and for other people. And then, through creative writing with our students, I wanted to really inspire my students that they could go do more. You know, a lot of times when they do these writing assignments, I think they're just writing to write. And I wanted to show them that they could do more with what they were writing and that what they had to write had value. And so just helping them this year with writing prompts really helped. And then we got this idea, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But that's a little bit about me. I do have three children. They're all grown, 26, 25, and I'm going to be 23, turning 23. She is 23. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Once I get over 20, it's like, it's just a number now.
Hey, listen, if you got it wrong, nobody listening knows. So it's okay.
No.
But I'm very blessed. They are all very outgoing and very confident and also very wanting to help and serve others, which is something that we always wanted for our kids. And so it's just kind of a labor of love. So we actually, three of myself, my daughter and my son actually all ended up teaching at that school for a while. And now, right now, just Joanna's teaching there because I'm actually working behind the scenes and helping international schools get their books through all the red tape. So so now I'm kind of a behind the scene person, but Joanna's still on the forefront. But I'll let Joanna tell a little bit about herself too.
That, and Joanna, I'm going to give you that in just a second. I had a question.
Sure.
You talked about the underground school in China. Are there risks associated with that? My understanding is they monitor, especially online internet, very closely.
They do. They have to get their books are in. They get their books in legally. But still, if they get caught with the books, they still have them seized. We've had our principal end up in house arrest. We've had several of our staff be put in under arrest, and then they get let go. But then their phones are monitored everywhere they go. But this school has been around for about 15 years. So
wow.
They're still just plotting because they believe that this is what God wants them to do. That they, you know, these parents, once they leave the Chinese system, they can't go back. And so they are dedicating that they're going to send their kid to America. And I probably have 13 students here in America right now in seventh grade through high school and college.
That is incredible. I'll tell you, when you're done with your saga, that would be a great story to write about. It really would.
It would.
So Joanna, what's it like having a mom who is so busy? You were schooled at home now you work by her side.
Yeah. It's been kind of a constant throughout our whole lives. I always would tell people, like, we're always busy. Something's always happening, or chaos is occurring. Just We always have a new project, so a lot of the times it may look like we have a lot of jobs, but it's really we just have a lot of hobbies and things we want to do. Wherever, as mom said, we have wherever inspiration takes us. So, like, graphic design was my college degree in general because I wanted to pursue something with the arts, and I still feel passionately that's still where God's directing. But after college, it led, obviously, we had COVID and everyone got sent home, and that was my graduation year. And so going back, I started investing into teaching since that's something I had been basically apprenticing under my mom for a lot of my life. And my
Teaching
father
junior
is, they've
church.
been, teaching junior church, teaching Sunday school lessons. Like that's something I'd already been helping with and doing. So it kind of led perfectly into this opportunity. And I don't touch, I teach a bit of graphic design sometimes. It depends on the year, what classes they want to have, but mostly it's just like fourth through sixth grade. Well, now it's sixth through eighth grade. Writing and reading is my main subjects. I love literature. I love storytelling. I love bringing those to life, or else helping students see it come to life and really dig into that content. I've always loved storytelling, forever. I have a very vivid imagination. So when this idea got struck by my mom, or like one night after teaching, I was like, all right, let's build it. So that's just our lives. We just kind of have an idea and we make it happen. So that's what I do. I teach. I say sometimes part-time. It feels more like full-time sometimes. It's a teacher thing. And
Well,
then in my free time, I'm crafting and puzzling and all different creative ventures.
listen, it's good to hear. It's refreshing to hear because there's so much idle minds, idle hands, and scrolling thumbs is what seems to be turning the world nowadays. Did COVID take away your graduation ceremony?
Oh,
It delayed it greatly.
absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, they sent us home about a month or so before graduation. And then my brother and I, we were both in the same year, and we both went to college at the same time. So we both sat in the living room while they had the commencement ceremony, which was basically, to summarize, was just, all right, you're graduated. I remember
Yeah.
just sitting in front of the TV going, okay. And they tried to give us one the year after, but it's just not the same. Everyone was kind of moved on in their lives into their next thing. So yeah, it was taken from us.
The covers on both books. Are you behind the covers?
Yes, yes.
I'm behind the lettering, like most,
Yes.
like
Well,
specifically,
in the
I.
brainstorming, yeah.
Right. Yes, and composition and such. But yeah, I really loved hand lettering when I was in college. It's something that I just love focusing on font and typeface design. So I'm the one who figures out all the wonderful wording and then the layout. I'm a big part of the layout design. That's something that I got to, I don't know if teach is the right word, but help give tips for and instruct when we were making them the first time. Here's the program,
I
here's what
think we
we
went
should
through,
leave.
yeah, I think we went through four versions of the cover before we finally found one that this is what we want, you know. So she did get tortured through several versions.
I want to talk about first book is No Place for Us. It opens in 1792 with Dr. William Harvey Wells on board the Endeavor. And there's also along with them a preacher, a Frenchman, and a Spanish blacksmith. They're sailing to America together. And without going into a whole bunch of detail and not giving a whole lot away, because a lot of this is in your description anyway, I always be careful with that because we want to sell books. That's what we're here for, right? It's to sell books. But they find themselves marooned, and the book deals with that. So I'll let you guys pick it up from there and
Well,
tell us the idea behind this story. And I would imagine, because neither one of you are old enough to have been around in 1792,
no.
that there had to be a lot of research, a
A
lot of research
lot.
this too. So.
I'm very passionate about the research. And the really cool thing about these books is you can go to the places in these books today. You can visit these places. There's a restaurant in book one that actually was still functioning until about a couple months ago. You could go where William talks about going to eat lunch with his father. You could go to that tavern and eat there today. The Knoll is still open and things like that. So we wanted to make the places that they went to very historically accurate. Did a lot of research, things you just don't think about, things like matches didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
The things like that, you're like, oops, they can't light a candle that way, things like that. So but it started out as an as just I watched a video that was on a song that just made me start thinking, would if I became something that everybody was afraid of, would I want to live forever? If I became that thing that, everybody always lauds vampirism as this like what you want, and they really laud the, especially in our world today, the seductiveness and the blood and the gore. And I'm like, what if we have people who don't want to be that? And if you have that, when in time would it be the hardest time to be that thing? And go a step further, what would be the jobs that would be the most difficult to be? Well, obviously a doctor, because at that time they bloodlet people. So here's a doctor who's become a vampire. He doesn't want to be a vampire. How does he survive? What does he do? Does he still be a doctor? And then we like a preacher, definitely a preacher. Oh goodness, how do you preach to your congregation that you need to have eternal life when you don't ever die? And how does he come to grips with that? Because he does not cast away his faith. So how does he still be a preacher? And how does that rock his world? And then we're like, okay, we got a father. Does he go back to his family? Does he not? Is it worth the risk? All right. And we even went a little bit more because Sebastian's actually been an orphan. So for him to abandon them, it's like the complete opposite of what he would ever want to do. But then we do have a character who embraces it all. And that's the one who really didn't want to be on the ship. And that's our Frenchman. We call him Senor Sassy Pants. He's my favorite character. But he pretty much is, he is embracing it, but we also show through his choices how his choices have ruined his life. He doesn't realize that's what's causing him to never succeed. And this book is really focused on redemption and how they all find some kind of redemption. Yes, they're looking to find out where their place is. Where do they fit in everything now? But also each one of them experiences some kind of redemption. And they go through many, many things that we do, and how they process it. Very real to life circumstances. And I guess what most people comment on the book is just how much the dialogue feels real. Like they would be sitting at that table with them and they could totally see that conversation happening today. And so it's just becomes this almost like band of brothers as they work through things. But the biggest thing when we wrote this too is I want it to be something that my kids could read in China and not be ashamed. We want to keep it clean and wholesome. So even when Emil, who's embracing things he really shouldn't, we want to keep it clean and wholesome. Closed door. Shut that door. We don't need to see that. Plus, we need to show that it wasn't a good choice in his life, and why it's, and so things like that. We wanted to make sure we kept it God honoring, so that if somebody picked up this book, they'd be like, okay, this is what's happening and this is why, and so and kept that going through book two as well. Go ahead, Joe.
A lot of the I find in this kind of genre with fantasy or specifically vampires, there's this big thing with like the shock factor you have to have for it to be appealing, like or this idea that it has to be pushed past our realities as well, like oh, let's experience this that I could never experience. But for us, a lot of it was we used Emil as the he's the one that's the bachelor, the one that makes the poor choices. We never wanted him to be the like, oh, let's just keep him in the dark corner. He'll just live there and we don't like his choices. I didn't I'm We were very, very careful with Emil's character. We loved his character. We loved his wit. We love how he helped
Droll
the other
sarcasm.
characters like brings out their personalities and different
It's
sides to
true.
them. We loved finding the balance between everyone. But it was one of those questions we had to ask ourselves, like, what do we want to include and what shouldn't we include? The reader can still figure out. And that was a fun balance to find
Well, you guys
for
found
ours.
that balance, especially with Emil, right? Because that character, I would confess to you that if I was writing that character, it would be very hard to not let him say something every so often that wouldn't fit that wouldn't fit the design that you guys really wanted. And I think there's at one part of it, you actually sort of allude to that it was off on another part of the ship where you could hear this type of language going on, but you didn't find a need to describe that language. The second thing I found fascinating is in the genre that is almost all by itself today of vampires, they focus more on either the appeal, the sexual type of appeal.
The seductiveness.
Exactly. They focus on that, or they make it so dark that it becomes scary. I guess the third one too, that they make it so profound that nobody can believe it. And you guys were actually able to take this, what I don't want to call it a handicap, but a
Well, actually, we
deficit.
call it a disability. We treat
Yeah.
vampirism as a
A
disability.
disability. And
It's a
that's great.
disability.
You were able to take this disability and make it part of their real life. Because you'd mentioned the dialogue. One of your goals is to have the reader become emotionally attached to your characters. And one of the best ways to do that is through dialogue. And your dialogue, even though I'm reading, I'm not listening to it on Audible or anything like that. I'm reading it.
It's coming out.
Oh,
I
good for
just fin
you.
I'm almost done. I'm like redoing a couple chapters I talked too fast on,
Yeah.
but I am just about ready to release it. Actually, coming
Yeah.
the next month.
Well, that's fantastic. And I do want to talk to you more about that. But even as I'm reading it, I can hear the voice of different characters talking. And that's something that writers that have been writing for years struggle with, where you go back and you realize that every sentence, it sounds like the same person talking. Even if you
Yes.
said, Joe said, Sally said, Joe said, right? It sounds like the same person. And you guys, it's an incredible job on that of pulling the reader in. I haven't read book two yet. I've just read the excerpts on it, but I'm looking forward to it, right?
Well, then
So
I have to give you a clue. For those of you who are listening, if you want to read both books, that's great. But you definitely do not want to read book two first. They are standalones. So you can read one and be totally fine. And let's say if you didn't read book one and you just wanted to read book two, you could do that. You would not be lost. But there is a huge spoiler in chapter one that you would
of
not
book
want
two.
to a book
A
two,
book two.
sorry, of
Right.
chapter one. Yeah. So you don't want to read book two if you want to plan on read book one in the future.
Yeah. So, we're gonna talk about book two here in just a second, but you mentioned going on audio. You're doing the recording yourself.
I am. That's a new thing I'm doing. It's been a bit of a stretch. I had to learn a lot of things.
I bet.
Mouth clicks annoy me. Having to go back in and fix those. I'm using Audacity in that. So I'm learning a
How
lot.
many
I have
doors we had to close in our house?
my boom mic. I can hear butterflies farting outside. Seriously, 10 miles away. I live by a lake and I can hear people motorboating. I'm like, you don't need to mow your lawn. You really don't need to mow your lawn.
But that's really cool. And let me know when that comes out, because we'll certainly let everybody know. And
Because
good luck with that.
there's certain lines that we were just like, they're our favorite lines. I mean, my
Right.
favorite line will always be when Emil gets, after they've gone through what they call the vacation from hell, where everything goes wrong on their way to get to William's house, and he's just soaking wet, and he's Mr. Prim and Proper, and he's taking off his boots, and he's like, I think I prefer to burn everything. You know what I mean? It
Yeah.
just you could just hear him being like, I really don't care what gets burned. I'm just done with this vacation. I'm just like, just incinerate it all. I'm done. So there's a certain lines that we still will quote that just, yep, that's a meal.
So then
There's some line.
no chance for us. So you guys didn't really have a lot of gap between the
Well,
first and second, right?
yeah, the first one I wrote in 8 weeks, and then I spent a year editing it, 12 edits over a year. The weird thing was I watched the video, and then I purposely did not watch anything from the video or anything like that, or anything from the song. I just wrote, so I wouldn't be influenced by anything. I'm very old school Bram Stoker, so we had to figure out what our canon was going to be. What could they do? What couldn't they do? What was going to affect them? What wasn't going to affect them? And stay true to that. Like, can they look at mirrors? Can they look at crosses? I mean, he's a preacher. He can look at crosses in ours because Bram Stoker, you can. So it's very
That
Bram Stoker
was
classical.
most of my job is canon compliance, whether it's the characters' personalities or the
Yes.
discussion on what powers they have. I was a big like anti-supernatural powers for these vampires. That was my thing. Probably a little too harsh because sometimes mom was like, "But can they do this?" I'm like, "If you must
Well,
for this." But yeah, I'm the canon compliance police.
for the aficionados out there of vampires, they have to admit that both the evolution of time and the different forks that that
Yes.
type of character has taken almost gives a writer carte blanche nowadays. And so
Well, it.
for you guys to decide, no, I don't want that. I want continuity
Well,
is
it's
pretty
different
cool.
because Bram Stoker, if you've done any research on Bram Stoker, he actually got his ideas from Irish folklore. So his ideas were based on Irish folklore to begin with. So most of the stuff that he came up with for Dracula was from actual stories of what people was going on at that time frame. So he was his own historical fiction writer in a way, but then branched, of course, into this. And then, of course, you know, we're like, I don't want to go into like mixing, because in one part of the book, William is actually researching all the different vampirism things in the world at that time. So you do get to hear a little bit of what the history was at 1793, what they believed vampires could do at that time. And he talks about what they can do that really is what it is. So you do get a lot of education. So we kept it very classical at, you know, hey, this is what it is in history. That's what we're going to follow.
And that's pretty cool. My childhood memories is of a soap opera called Dark Shadows,
Dark
and Barnabas
Shadows.
Collins was the vampire, right? And growing
I
up
get
as
a
a
lot of people talk about Dark Shadows.
yeah, and growing up as a kid, that's what I thought a vampire was Barnabas Collins, who was really a successful businessman at the end of the day, is what he was. So
A
it's
lot of people are like, the only one thing I knew was Dark Shadows. I love this. I'm like, okay, good, you know.
yeah.
But it does, it is a genre that is hard as a Christian to promoting it because people, it's just like with Harry Potter. People very much are like, oh, vampires, bad, evil, Satan. But this book is, there are three sermons in this book by what Nathaniel does, you know, and you get the plan of salvation before you even get to chapter three, you
Right.
know, actually, maybe chapter four. So, I mean, it's very much, but it's not like in your face, like, hello, I'm preaching at you. It's Nathaniel sharing his heart. It's Nathaniel saying, this is what you're struggling with. This is what I believe, you know, but it's not like he's never shoving it down their throats, sharing this is who he is. And they come, I can't tell you more, but they things change in the book
Don't do
by his
it.
example. You know,
Yeah,
I
don't give
can't
away too
spill
much. Remember,
anymore.
we're here to sell books.
Can't spill anymore.
Yeah. But it is a challenge when a Christian writer is writing a book that is not about going to church on Sundays and gathering around the dinner table. I think that when you take that stage, you list this book as being Christian, historical Christian, is you have to know there's people that are going to go out there and say, wait a minute, how can you talk about vampires? The vampires are satanic or from the devil or whatever, you know, even though vampires are completely 100% fictitious. And I'm assuming you guys both believe that,
Is
right?
there examples in history where people like thought that that was how you had to solve certain medical things? Absolutely. Are vampires real? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
So I would like Walmart to stop recommending a vampire killing kit to me. You know, Brian's suggestion. He's like, I don't need a vampire kit. Thank you.
Yeah. So you made it through the first book and
Did.
you came out with the second book,
So,
No Chance for Us.
yep.
And this takes place about 15, 16 years later than the beginning of the
Almost
first book.
20. It starts
20.
out, well, it starts out in 1808. You're right. But then
Okay.
it goes to 1812. The majority of the book is 1812, and it's right before the War of 1812. And it is one of those wars that most people in America know nothing about. And yet, and I had to watch this huge documentary, did lots of study on it, because I'm like, what is it all about? I mean, seriously, that war is what we are going through right now with Trump and the 51st state of Canada. I'm like, people don't realize what we went through, and because it was a stalemate, it really wasn't one that we won. And why we went into the war and everything. So Emil actually is a representative in the government, and he's trying to stop them from going to war. And of course, we got William as a doctor working at the hospital, And I'm not going to talk about the other characters because it affects the book. But they are there when we get there, and most of our characters from book one are still there in book two. And it is very much the no chance for us is them. When all the truths you think are real, like when you think you can live forever, you make different choices than when you think you can't. And so up until that point, they think they can live forever because that's what they've been told. But then they learn that they cannot, they will not in some way. And and so through that, them having to make realizing what are they willing to sacrifice in their lives when things come up, what are they willing to do, when you don't have forever, will you live your life differently? Will
Yeah.
you make different choices?
The goals
What's
will be for your
important?
life changes too.
Exactly. And really, honestly, it's pushing the book two is completely different than book one. It is a in-depth character. You really get into the characters. You can learn their backstories, how they interact, why they get mad, why they don't get mad, why they makes them happy, what makes them scared, their fears. So it's very much somebody called it a palate cleanser. You go from I think there's probably like four genres in the first book. We got mystery, historical fiction, pastoral romance. I mean, there's all
Found
kinds of,
family.
yeah, I mean, there's slice of
It's
life.
my
It's all in the
favorite.
first one. But then in the second one, it's very historical fiction romance based, but also there's still those philosophical questions.
Right.
Nathaniel, like, why does God want me here? What can I do here on earth that would make me worth being here for 50, 100
So
years?
the readers will see this maturation process from book one to book two
Yes.
in the character and each of the characters, but there seems to still be there some struggle with
There is a huge struggle because they're going to go through an epidemic. They're one of them does not make it through book two, so it changes things a lot. Go ahead, Joe.
a key focus we had with our books one and two and onward is these guys are just people. They're just people. We wanted to make this vampirism like a disability for multiple reasons. A lot of things we could bring up from our own lives, my mother and I, we've put into our characters struggles we've had physically,
Anxiety.
mentally, mental health versus like physical health disabilities, things like that. And it just felt right to, I mean, it's a you put yourself into your characters, everyone does
Right.
in that way. And so keeping them human, even though they're vampires, it to struggle is to be human. How you work through those struggles is what defines you as a person, and like your effort toward it, what you put toward those goals, will shape your future. And so that was the big focus with if they didn't struggle, we wouldn't have a book, but also they wouldn't be who they are,
Right.
in general, and they wouldn't
So,
grow.
and you're right. As a writer, I try not to base characters on me. It's much more fun basing characters on people I know and seeing if they figure it out that they were part of
I'm
it.
a little bit like Dickens in collecting names. In fact, a lot of the names in our book are some family or friend. In fact, my cousin or my niece was reading it and she's like, "Oh, that's so cool that his last name is Miller. I have a grandpa named Miller. Oh, wait a minute. I know the author."
Or the fact that like one of our characters is a mix of are my brother and his personality, and then one of my friends from camp. Like I've served, I think it
Thomas.
was my fourth summer at a camp in North Carolina, and so I had a very distinct, bright personality of a friend. Love him to death. So I mixed him with my brother, and my brother was reading the first book. I think he got about halfway through, and he's like, "Mom, who's
He's like,
Thomas based on?"
who's Thomas based on? Because
Mom.
our youth director used to say to Jed, the youth activity hadn't begun until Jed had fallen down in some way. And we
So
said that
funny.
about Thomas in the book. It's so because he's very accident prone.
Well,
It's so
that's
when
fun to do too, where you take, in this case, it's two people you know, and you work to meld their personalities together like that, and what comes out, the creation that comes out, is sometimes like, well, it's like you didn't expect that, right? And it's really fun to watch those characters come about, those characters start to grow. Yeah, and you don't want it, I don't want it to be so obvious that, hey, I'm writing about you. But they do, they all have a little uniqueness about them that's always fun to explore. Book three, I'd asked you early on.
Yes. Well, we have the books already planned out to book six, actually. So
Wow.
we, and I think we're going to end at
And
six. There was only going to be
we,
five, and we added an extra one
you
in
added
between here.
one
We
this
just added
summer.
one for this one. Yeah. That's what we're working on now is book three. So there will be six in the saga, all standalones. Then this one that we're writing now is taking place 1815, actually 1816, so just after the war. And I tried to keep them out of a war because they are vampires after all. It would be very complicated. So we're like, okay, well, I don't really want to get there yet. So far I've kept them out of wars. But Emile does end up fleeing the French Revolution in the first book. But anyways, book three is very much after the war, and it delves right back into book one material. We are right back into all things vampire. Emma is a big focus of that book. That's Emile's intended. And so we are right back into that, and a lot of character development. And William's niece is going to come to town expecting to find a 60-year-old Uncle William. Uncle William only looks 28. So there's going to be lots of drama. Book four is going to end up in the time period of the Pony Express. So we'll be starting out going out west in book four. Book four is New Bedford, Pennsylvania. Book five is out west. Book six is the Titanic. It's the
Wow.
last one. We actually have
Wow.
relatives who survived the Titanic. They were on it.
Vampires are, oh, well, that's kind of, that's the
Yes.
last one, right? So
The last one.
you began
On a, exactly.
on
Yeah,
the ship
the
and ended,
last book. Yep,
that's
full
brilliant.
circle. In fact, he even says on the back of the book, William wonders, was he always meant to die in a shipwreck?
Okay, so now we know William's not the one that dies in book two,
He is not the one that
right?
dies.
That's a good point. Oh no, they've deduced it. No, William
And
can't
we can
die.
edit that out if you prefer, right?
No, it's fine.
No, no, it's not
No.
hard
I
to
mean, he's
tell.
on book. He's on the cover of book two. He can't die.
He can't die.
So do you consider him a ma the main character?
That's a good question, but no. In fact,
No.
I've even checked. I always
Wait,
check to
wait.
see how many times I've used their names. Go ahead, Joe.
So it was really interesting, the planning process, because when we first created the story idea, we had a
Yes.
whole different idea in mind where it was going to be this like
The dark
dark,
side.
grim. They just, I'm always kind of a little interested in like the, I don't, not the darker side. That's like a
More
sad way to put it, but
fatalistic
like,
endings.
yeah, and just the observation of it. There's a beauty in tragedy. I don't love reading everything tragedy, but there's something about our story concept that it could have been a tragedy. And William was going to be the main character. We had another cast, but he was going to be the, didn't we say he was like the Jesus character
We
in
call
a
him the
way?
JC character. In literature,
Or the hero.
there's a JC character who has the same qualifications, does the same actions as Jesus would.
Yes.
He always acts noble, self-sacrificing. That you see that in Red Badge of Courage and things like that. They
Right.
usually even
No.
have them in with the same letters.
Yes.
But anyways, but yeah, go ahead.
So he was supposed to be that kind of character, and we had this whole idea in mind of who this great villain would be. He'd have to pursue throughout the whole series. And then when we changed it, we're like, well, let's hope he's not the main character. And so that's what we've actually had to check to make sure it is balanced between all four of them. But in my
Yes,
mind,
it
he
is a very
was
good
the
balance.
first.
And everybody who reads it finds a different one that's their favorite. I have not had anybody that's like, oh, well, I've never had anybody like, oh, we all love Emile. Oh, we like Joanna's favorite is William. And
William and
my other daughter's
Sebastian.
favorite is Nathaniel. My son loves Signor Moretti, you know? So everybody who reads it falls in love with somebody different. And I think that's kind of cool because they relate to different people in the book, and there's enough characters to choose from.
Well, there definitely is to keep track of all that, especially over the a six book timeline. Your spreadsheet's got to be 100 tabs long.
There's
Just
our
gonna
there's my
show
wall.
her oh my goodness
Giant canvas. But we do We
use actually Mural
used
app.
I showed her Mural. That's actually like the first night we were planning. I was like, I know a place that'd be perfect for this. So it's called Mural, and it's basically just a giant, ever-expanding whiteboard or
Right.
pin
Sticky
board. You could
notes.
just put notes and sticky notes and pictures and links. And yeah, so I showed that to her. And then ever since, she's just made this giant canvas, family
Pictures and everything.
trees.
Well, your wall is great. It helps you keep things organized, correct?
Caught myself on a couple things. Nathaniel says that the guy looks like his carbon copy. Guys in 1812, they wouldn't have even
That's not
known
a
about
thing.
carbon copies. You know what I mean? So things like that, things that you say in dialogue now, you're like, they wouldn't have said that in 1812. So you're
And
having to
Joanna,
fix
that's
things
your
like
job to catch all
the
that.
mom's is the historical accuracies, mine are the character ones. So for
Right.
book two, and this is something that like future things we've talked a lot about, my biggest thing with book two was keeping William's character accurate for William. We had less of Emile and so on in it. And so I've always felt like in the first few drafts, the blend of their personalities started occurring. So that was one of the few things I've had to be like, nope, this
Right.
is
She's
wrong.
the
That's
guardian of the
not
characters.
William. Yeah,
Right.
I am. These guys are mine.
Well, and
I will protect them.
it's fun to find out because I mean with the world that we live in nowadays, with actually just a couple of clicks, you can find out so much about a world that we didn't live in, right? But dialogue, I think a lot of time writers don't realize how important that is. I had one story I wrote that was setting was in 1918 Boston. I was struggling with the dialogue and how they would talk. Couldn't find any dialogue because there's no YouTube in 1918, right? From that period.
And that ties in with book two because I actually found a book, a medical book from 1800s
Wow.
that I use primarily for book two. So the treatments that he uses are from that book. There's handwritten calligraphy, homemade recipes for treating different things. And so they were in the book. And so that book I used a lot for things like how they treated diabetes, how they treated epilepsy. A lot of that stuff you'll see in book two, it's right from a medical journal from that time period.
That's incredible. Well, the only question I have left for both of you is, how do you have time to do anything else?
And I work a full-time job, and so does she.
It was a lot, I think, for the first book. It was
Yeah, a
when my
lot of
term is
editing.
hyperfixation. It was the that was mom's spark.
Right.
Getting to see my mom light up again about an idea and interest was so amazing to see. And it's been
I
amazing to
had a
see ever
movie in my head
since.
that had to come out. It was like I had watched the whole movie already. I just had to
Right.
get it on a paper.
Yeah.
And that's kind of happened. Like right now I have book three completely planned out in my head. And I'm just like, I'm almost frustrated writing it because I'm like, I want to get to the good stuff.
Right. Right.
When are for book one, it was when are we leaving
When are we
the
leaving the cave and lost? We need to get out of the cave.
When are we gone? I will never forget that
Because we were
series of
editing
like
that.
weeks.
Yeah, we were editing chapters 3 and 4, and Joanna's just like, we just have to get out of the cave. I'm tired of being in the cave. So we do get that as a writer, you
I will
know.
say it consumes a lot of our conversations with each other. We do have
Yes.
the to like
Keep it
guard
balanced.
that we do actually have other
Something
conversations.
else to talk about.
Like literally that was our dinner conversation just before this. He's like,
Yeah.
hey, book three, here's
Well.
I need your idea for like some of the conflicts. So
Yeah.
it's I think that is a part of it. I think it's mostly
Yeah.
mom's time
Yeah.
that she takes
Keeping a
and
filter.
invests.
Well, I think our listeners today, what they were able to learn is it's more than just about writing that story. There's
It's
so
true.
much that goes into it, with research and the continuity of a story when you're planning on putting in an audio, all those things that go with it. One of my favorite writer of all time is Hemingway. And one of my favorite quotes from Hemingway, he said, just write.
I
Just
always tell people, I
write.
said, get it on the paper, you can
Yeah.
edit it
And
later.
then go back and set it down for a while, let it simmer for a while before you go back and edit all the way along.
But that's the best part because when you go back through on your seventh and eighth and ninth edit, I'm putting in breadcrumbs for book two, and I'm good because I've already written book two, and so I know what needs to be put in, and putting in all these backstories and foreshadowing, and this is where you put all like things like we started adding things in book two that we knew we were going to put in book three. So it's that's the fun part, is getting to put in all those tie-ins as a literature teacher. So we were like, yeah,
I think I'll stick with
Yeah.
standalones,
The other thing
but
was something we had to accept for book one, especially, it was like when we learned it.
right.
It's okay if you have to change something that you were
Right.
really attached
Letting
to.
things go is hard, but you have to
You
just do it.
gotta learn how to, but it makes a better
Yeah.
story once you let it go and actually pursue the idea that works.
And being able, and you're right, it's like giving up something that you created, crumbling it up.
Or adding it back in. I actually, the beginning of chapter 25, where Emma and them get on the boat, there's a whole scene about them on the boat and her in the kitchen and everything in there. None of that was in the first edition that some of the people have. But everybody was begging me to put in that scene. And I'm like, okay, fine, put it in. So people who got the first like 15 or 16 books do not have chapters 25, first 3 pages. Everybody else does. So you
Well,
can, if you like the boat scene, you can thank all the readers.
there you go. It's and but it's being able to, as a writer, to recognize those things
Yeah.
and realize that although they sometimes they feel like your children, young children, they'll rebel against you, they'll talk
Oh,
back
yeah.
to you. It and I had six kids. I never threw any of them away or kicked them out. I've torn up a lot of sheets of paper. So it's a little
Yeah.
bit easier. So I know you're on Amazon. You got both
I
books
am.
on Amazon, and that is also, is that available as a set also?
Not yet, because of the fact that they don't sell it as a set until you have all six
Oh,
out. So until you get the
okay.
whole series out, they don't sell as a set. So right
So,
now we got the ebook and the regular book. It's too big to be a hard copy, I mean, to be
right.
the hardcover. And it's also too many pages to do a large edition. A lot of people
Right.
are asking for the large print. And unfortunately, with over 600 pages, one 612, the other one's 540 something.
Oh,
Anything
a
over
lot of words.
500, they won't do large print.
But on an e-reader, they can enlarge that on
Yes, they
themselves,
can
right?
enlarge it
Yeah,
themselves, but I
can.
can't put out a large print edition
Yeah.
because Amazon has restrictions. But anyways, but
And
it's good.
so it's on Amazon, and is it, do you have a website that they can buy it
We
at, or is there
do
anybody else?
actually. We have actually. I think of like I just created it actually. On Facebook, we have JC King. So you can go onto there. We also have the aeternumsaga.com, and it is Latin for forever saga. So it's AETERNUM. So Aeternum Saga for the, because it goes off of a song. Who wants to live forever? Is the forever sagas. There is a website there you can contact there if you want to do the purchase of the novel. It also has information about all the future novels coming up.
Awesome.
So.
Well, I'll put the links to your book and to your website in the show notes,
Awesome.
and encourage our readers to go there and hey, go buy a book, and especially if you like to sit down on a weekend and just start from the beginning and keep reading, because well, you won't finish it in a weekend. Hate to tell you
I don't know. I had this,
that.
I've had several readers. I'll check in with them and I'm like, oh, what chapter you're on? They're like 22. And then I'll check in like 2 days later and they're like, I said, so where are you at now? She's like, oh, I had to finish it. I'm sorry.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
So
Yeah.
once you get past like the 20s, it
Right.
starts going fast. It's our books tend to, once you get in the middle,
Right.
things get fast and
Yeah.
furious. So
Well,
it
listen,
changes a lot.
it was wonderful meeting you guys. You guys are a heck of a team.
Yeah.
You're a heck of a mom and you're a heck of
Thank
a
you for the
daughter.
opportunity.
And you guys are great. And I look forward to these other ones coming out. Again, thank you so much. Well, that was our interview with Catherine and Joanna King, mother and daughter, authors, the creators of No Place for Us and No Chance for Us, the first two books in a saga that's going to be 6 books long. And you can find the links to the books and to her website down in the show notes. It's been good spending time with them, A, and it's been good spending time with you. It's time for this old boy to hit the road. Look for me. I'll be the one walking down the highway with a book tucked under his arm.